Episode 262.
I think there's four buckets. You've got to fix technical education. We've got to fix our business management because we're losing too many. Once we get kids, we lose them often to other industries. So there's some things wrong with our shop environments, with our managements, with the sophistication of our management, the sophistication of our businesses. You know, and that's not a NATEF problem. That's a different bucket. And then we've got to market to ourselves. Like I said, there's all these projects out there. More businesses, more shops need to be engaged with the AES program. Well, they don't even know about it. They should, but they don't. They're small business people. They've got other priorities. They're trying to pay the bills every day. We understand that. But we have to find some way. We're going to lose this battle and not have any people, any good people in our industry to fix these cars if we don't try to fix all these things together.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, good day or good evening. No matter what time of day you're listening, I sure appreciate your listenership to the Aftermarket's premier educational resource. You're about to hear from Skip Potter, the just-retired executive director of NASDAQ, here in episode 262 of Remarkable Results Radio. Carm Capriato here thanking Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus for their support so you have this powerful content library. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, would you like to get an update on the week's new podcast releases? If that interests you, become an insider. Go to remarkableresults.biz/social for every way you can connect with the podcast. And listening, it's easy. When you use the Remarkable Results Radio listening app, I hope you enjoy the cool features it has. Now, if you need to get it for your smartphone, just go to your app store and search for Remarkable Results Radio and install. You won't be disappointed. I would love to welcome new Facebook friends, Gary Olson and Richard Uddenberg, and to my new LinkedIn connections, Robert O'Connor, Stacey Miller, and Shane Coberly. Thanks so much for your connections. For all my social links, go to remarkableresults.biz/social. Now meet Skip Potter. Find the show notes and an extended bio on Skip at remarkableresults.biz/E262. Skip is an unsung legacy leader in our beloved aftermarket. He just retired as the executive director of NASDAQ, the National Automotive Service Task Force. Skip gives us a firsthand account of the value NASDAQ brings to the industry, and you will be surprised. Skip is also one of those very versatile industry leaders. He takes us through his distribution background, motorsports, tools, service, collision, and heavy duty. He also had important roles with leading industry associations and a radio career with a syndicated radio broadcast called Virginia Raceline. Skip is a great example of a legacy aftermarket leader that we need to know about. So prepare for an important understanding of the role NASDAQ plays for all of us and the storied career of a legacy aftermarket leader. Now, here's the interview with Skip Potter. Hey, a warm welcome to Skip Potter, retired, I can't believe I'm saying that, Skip, executive director of NASDAQ.
Yeah, I can't believe you're saying it either.
Yeah, I know. We talked the other day on the phone, and you said they had to take me kicking and screaming.
Yeah, I never thought I would see this day. I kind of always thought I would work forever, but life throws you curves, and you've got to play the hand you're dealt, I guess, has always been my theme. So,
what a storied career. Skip and I were on the phone, as a prelude to this call, and I kept saying, I've heard you speak, and I started to mention places, and he says, yeah, I was there. And then I said, weren't you with the old AAIA, the group before AutoCare? And he goes, yes. So I ended up, if you will, rekindling my memories of Skip and all that he did for the associations of our great industry. But it even goes beyond that. You were in the distribution side, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. The more public side of my career was really from 1988 on when I got into the associations. And while that was a lot of fun, I can't even tell you how much fun I had in distribution and all those other, and playing around in shops when I would work either part-time or between jobs, I would work in shops. And so, yeah, I've been around this industry since high school in 1963, and I've had a wonderful career, and I think I've touched just about every corner of the industry.
I think they call it a storied career, because if we sat down with you with a beer one day, you could tell us stories.
It'd take more than a day.
I bet you. And we were going on and on. It was great. I would only hope you could tell the story of how you got hired at AAIA. I'm not sure we're going to get to there, but we're sure going to try. So in 2012, June, you joined NASTF as their executive director. That was a big change in your world, or not? Was that just a perfect segue into what you were doing?
Well, I think it was a perfect change. My wife and I wanted to move to Florida, and my goal all along was to get to a point where I could work out of the house and kind of change the definition of work. While I never wanted to retire, I knew that working 60 to 80 hours a week was not practical, and nor did I really care to do that anymore. So when we moved down here, the opportunity to get the job with NASTF just was incredible opportunity for me to do that.
So NASTF stands for the National Automotive Service Task Force. Is one of the challenges in your role with NASTF is to really engage more of the industry into the value that NASTF provides our industry?
Well, just for those that aren't aware, NASTF really has two constituencies. It's not advertised that it was formed by the OEMs, but it really was. The OEMs formed the organization back in 2000 to help them kind of implement the requirements and their desires, their voluntary desires, in doing business with the independent service sector. So that's one side of the NASTF's constituency. But we really grew up servicing the independent service technician, and that is a serious constituency as well.
So the information needed to get into the hands of the people that were fixing cars, and there were more independent automotive aftermarket professionals fixing cars than in dealerships, and the OE said, hey, we got to get them the tools and the technology and the information so that they can fix our customers' cars.
Yeah, and that's not getting any easier, is it?
No. Which is why NASTF is probably more important now than ever, right, Skip?
I've said that. Actually, I did a speech on that very subject here recently. You know, NASTF now more than ever. But let me, you said something about the independent service technician versus the franchise dealer. It was pointed out to me very early in my career with NASTF that a franchise dealer, they have to service outside of their franchise. They have used car departments. They have customers, good customers that they want to take care of in their neighborhood that have non-franchise vehicles. And I had a dealer tell me that, he happened to be a Mazda dealer. And he said, you know, when I get a Chrysler in here, I'm just like the gas station down the street. I'm just as independent as he is. And NASTF has very many independent service technicians who happen to work for franchise dealers, just that franchise.
NASTF has a board of volunteers, right? And it is made up of a cross-section of the independent aftermarket and the OEs?
Yes. NASTF bylaws specify the balance of the board of directors. There's roughly four representatives from the OEMs and four representatives, like I said, from our primary constituency, which would be the shop owner and the independent technician. In some cases in our industry, as you know, that's the same person. And there's 15 people on the board of directors, so that's eight. So your other seven come from all over the industry. And yes, it's an industry organization. It's intended to bring the broader industry together, not not dealer versus independent, not parts versus service, or OEM versus dealer. NADA has a spot on the board of directors. So pretty diverse, certainly the most diverse board of directors I'd ever served.
They get along?
Yeah, they have to. Actually, I had a rule. One of the things I did when I was interviewing, I said, I've got a rule for board meetings and for committee meetings. No divisive rhetoric.
I said that totally tongue-in-cheek.
Well, but you can imagine, I mean, just within the aftermarket, there's a diversion of opinions on how we address right to repair, our view of telematics, and all of those things. And in order, since NASDEF was created really to solve a problem that was already agreed that it needed to be solved, and it was either agreed because it became a law, and the law says you have to, you being the independent industry or the OEMs or whoever, somebody's got to comply with this, and we need to make this work for the consumer. When you get all this diverse group that's now charged with solving a problem rather than arguing a position, it was always, okay, let's leave the positions at the door. When we come inside the NASDEF room, we know what the problem is. We know what our positions are. We don't have to belittle anybody. We don't have to embarrass anybody. We are here to solve the problem.
Very good piece of advice. Thank you. I learned something from that. In the last 5 years, can you think of anything that you're the most proud of?
Oh, there's a lot. The thing I got the most pleasure out of was after spending a long career, mostly on the aftermarket side, partially in distribution, partially in tools, partially in service, partially in motorsports, partially in collision side, partially in heavy duty, mostly in automotive. But here comes a group now that I had not had much interaction with, and that was the OEM side of the industry, the automakers themselves. So to get a chance to, over the last 5 years, go out and meet someone from almost all 40 of the OEMs. There's 40 OEMs that we identified that either participate or should participate in NASDEF because they're selling into the U.S. marketplace.
What a big number. I'm just taken aback by that.
Everybody is. I love that number. But back to your question about most proud of. You know, when you go to work for a trade association, you have to do what the board of directors want you to do. A lot of times they don't even know what they need you to do. But you have to start with what they want you to do. And that was the very first question when I started. I said, okay, what are your priorities for me? What do you want me to do? Because I was really the first employee of NASDEF. You know, prior to that, it was volunteers. And in the early years, when they had a bill, they would bring it to a board meeting and say, okay, who's going to pay this? Oh, well, we'll chip in this much, and they'd get the bill paid. And they pretty much did that until about 2006, when it got to be, they needed to be a formal IRS organization. In order to do that, they needed some help. So ASE, as you might remember, volunteered because they were on the board of directors. Tony Mala was on the board, and he volunteered his organization to kind of provide some administrative help. They had a website, or they needed to host it somewhere. Somebody needed to pay the bills. Somebody needed to answer the telephone if someone ever called. So they got emails and things like that that were NASDEF emails. So they organized all that as volunteers. And it wasn't until 2012 that there was a trade association, but there was no organization to run it. So I was really the first organization to help them.
Great story. I'm talking with Jonathan Jacquelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So Jonathan, how does a service professional get the guru on the go van to their shop?
There's a couple ways. We do what we call cold calls, where we go around and just visit shops based on geographics, and there's also times where we team up with outside sales reps from other parts distributors and visit the shops on that basis.
So I love this. You pull into a shop on a cold call, they see the van, and they're probably excited to see you.
Yeah, I've had a couple shops where they've actually have already heard of the Gurus via Facebook or social media. So when I show up, they've already been signed up and taken online classes, and now that the van's there, it's really easy to book a lunch and learn.
So you're really an extension of the Garage Guru training centers.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're all done with your lunch and learn. You spend 45 minutes to an hour. Probably that's all you can really get from a busy, busy shop. What are the technicians saying about your shop visit?
Oh, they love it. They thank me, you know, every second I'm walking out the door and just can't wait for me to come back again.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. You know, it's rare to get the behind-the-scenes look at the evolution of an association like this.
So many associations start that way. Small state trade associations start with a couple of volunteers who have a vision, and maybe it's nothing more than just an oyster roast that turns into a relationship, and they all eventually they start doing something on the business side.
Skip, can anyone join?
Yeah, now the NASDEF, it's free, so it's an easy membership to sell. NASDEF membership is open actually internationally, although NASDEF only serves technicians and OEMs who do business in the United States. There are some other organizations. There's a parallel organization in Canada that work very closely with us, but the actual mandate, the bylaws of the United States, the bylaws for NASDEF only cover the United States. And yes, anybody can join. Like I said, the two primary constituencies are the OEMs and the independent technicians, but really everyone else in between that make that marketplace work.
So I'm a shop owner, really a technician. I can join.
Sure.
And what am I going to get from this free membership? Is there a lot of information that goes out through email that keeps me right on the edge?
Well, you mentioned early on that not enough of the industry knows that NASDEF exists even. In fact, one of the primary requests from the NASDEF board of directors of me when I came on board was, hey, we need to get the word out. We need to grow membership. When I came on board, they had a small database. They had a bunch of spreadsheets with names on it and stuff. And I pulled all that together, and there was 1,100 names. And today, that list is down to two lists. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there's probably 15,000, 16,000 maybe even combined on those two lists. So that part of it has grown substantially. I'm very proud that I was able to bring that all together. And in a membership organization, there's two parts of membership growth. You have got to be visible. You've got to be known. So they have to be aware of you. And then there has to be enough value in the organization for them to say, you know, I know you're not going to share my email address, and I don't like to sign up for anything, even if it's free, but okay, I trust you, I will. And that's pretty much what it takes to build the membership for NASDAQ.
And so what's the membership now? How many?
There's two databases. One is the NASDEF supporter database, and the other is, we haven't talked about this yet, but one of the products that NASDEF delivers for the industry is called the Vehicle Security Professional Registry. For all the locksmiths in the industry in the United States, for all the security technicians, which now is almost any technician that's working on any electronics in the vehicle, it requires some form of security code that only the OEMs have. And the OEMs are only going to sell it to somebody they trust. And NASDEF does the background checks and the audits and the security audits and looks out for the OEM's security interest as they distribute these codes and PIN numbers directly from their point of sale on their websites. So you go to the GM website, the Chrysler website, the any of those light vehicle, particularly OEMs, there will be an option there to purchase key codes, transponder PIN numbers, immobilizer reset pins, anything to do with the security of the vehicle.
So I would need to be a NASDAQ member in order to even start qualifying?
Well, that's why we wind up with two databases, because those databases, the Vehicle Security Professional database, is separate from the NASDAQ sponsor or supporters database. Ideally, what would be nice if it could happen is that someone would find out about NASDAQ. They'd come to our website and they'd find out, oh, I could get this. I need this LSID, this lock security ID number, and I need to become a NASDAQ vehicle security professional. And they would sign up on the NASDAQ website as a supporter first, which gets them the information then that they need to get the LSID number.
You said you were vetting them. What's that process like?
Oh, it's a lot more intensive these days than it ever was before. There's criminal background checks that are done. The applicants need to be part of a business that is in the business of doing this kind of work. There's not a lot of proof that's necessary yet. That could change. In addition to the background checks, there are some business checks to verify that the business that they say they're with is actually in existence. If they're an employee of a business, we want to know more about the business. We want to know more about not just them as an individual.
Who do you farm this out to?
There are services that we subscribe to, that NASDAQ subscribes to, in order to accomplish all of this. And more and more of it with technology now, more and more of it is going to be able to be done electronically.
I did not know that you guys were doing this. So the industry, when you talk with the OEs, are they as concerned about where we're getting our future technicians as the independent side?
Yes, as a matter of fact. You know, the industry, I can remember starting in about 1985, I think, I heard that there's a shortage of qualified technicians. Someone else may remember that that goes back before that, but I'd been around the industry since in the mid-60s, like I said, but I don't remember anyone saying, hey, there's a shortage of qualified technicians, until about the mid-80s. And that was about the time that, you know, all those Chrysler ignition resistors were failing. And that was, you know, the concept of electronic ignition then was a Chrysler resistor, ignition resistor. That transition, I guess, kind of prompted the thought that we're not just hiring dropouts out of high school anymore. We're looking for qualified technicians. And what is qualified? One of the problems is we've never really defined what is qualified. So what NASDAQ did a couple of years ago, we had a session actually in March of 2016 while we were out at Vision. And it was a very good discussion about the need for qualified technicians and what the industry is doing and all of the other problems around it. And it started, one of the things that did was it started a discussion of what the problems were. So some of the problems were, in addition to that, was, well, we also don't have enough qualified instructors. And, oh, well, we don't have enough, you know, the high school shops have been closing. We need to revive those. When we have technical training, career training, in-service tech training, you know, the attendance, the class attendance is so poor. The technician pay doesn't attract anybody to the industry. The guidance counselors and the parents don't want their kids to become techs. So there's all of these problems, and we listed about 50 or 60 problems that people have been complaining about mostly since 1985. And the NASDAQ board of directors got talking about this at the next board meeting. And the OEMs kind of chimed in and said, you know, this is not just an aftermarket problem. Bingo, the NASDAQ board said, well, the mission of NASDAQ is to close the gaps between the needs of the OEMs and the existence of the ability of technicians to service vehicles. So we said, well, NASDAQ doesn't need to fix all of these problems, but because NASDAQ is such a unique organization that happened to have an education committee, and NASDAQ is unique in that each of its committees has a co-chair, and by definition, their leadership has to be one OEM representative and one independent. There's two chairs. So NASDAQ's kind of in a natural position there because of the way we're formed and the way the kind of interest we get, I guess, from the OEM side. And the fact that we are an association of associations. So if you look at the board of directors or you look at who participates in the NASDAQ committees, teams, they call them teams now, there are people from all over the industry of all associations. So when you look, you've got the Auto Care Association and ASA, and you've got the state associations, the state parts associations, the service associations, all the associations on the collision side are all involved in NASDAQ. So they all have a voice there. The idea then for the board of directors was to create a project that they now call Building a Road to Great Technicians. And it was assigned off to by the board to the NASDAQ Education Committee to see where they could take this. And the challenge then was, how do we fix this so that the things we've been talking about since 1985, 10 years from now, we don't want to be talking about those problems anymore. We want those to go away. So when you looked at things like NATEF and AES and ASE are at the forefront of a lot of the solutions that we're looking for. But like one of the problems is that not everyone supports the AES program, which is involves the mentoring. And, that's a critical part of educating technicians throughout a career and claiming them from a good community college program and then keeping them through and developing them into a good technician. There are solutions that are already out there, but the industry is not using them enough. They're not aware of them in some cases, just like the awareness of NASDAQ. Well, NASDAQ's not the only one that's not fully revealed to the industry. So there's all these solutions out there, and what NASDAQ hopes to do with Building a Road to Great Technicians is giving them all a voice, giving them some visibility, some central visibility, and then let's solve all of these problems. NASDAQ, the last action of the education committee was to try to define some buckets into which all the problems could be sorted so that we didn't have 50 solutions, 50 projects.
Is ASE working close with you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, ASE has always been involved. In fact, Trish Serator, who runs the NATEF program, has been on every conversation we've ever had, really, about education. No organization should have a conversation about education without having Trish Serator involved in it.
Do you see NATEF taking the lead on this, or do you see them as just a major player in these changes to building a road to great technicians?
If you look at the list of projects that have to be fixed, or the list of problems that need to be fixed, and then try to try to find a bucket for them. NATEF, sure, would be involved in anything where if we have to try to fix education, sure, NATEF's involved. But NATEF's only involved typically at the community college and VOTEC levels. We also have problems with continuing education in our industry. Well, ATMC, Dave Milne, is involved with this project there and represents that. So like I said, there's groups out there and there's associations that are doing some amazing things. You know, we're being killed by 1,000 paper cuts, you know. So what we need to do is come together and let everyone do what they can do, but make sure that it all fits together and we can. I think there's four buckets. You've got to fix technical education. We've got to fix our business management because we're losing too many. Once we get kids, we lose them often to other industries. So there's some things wrong with our shop environments, with our managements, with the sophistication of our management, the sophistication of our businesses.
Business culture, pay, all of that, a sense of belonging and engagement with,
You know, and that's not a NATEF problem. That's a different bucket. And then we've got to market to ourselves. Like I said, there's all these projects out there. You know, more people, more businesses, more shops need to be engaged with the AES program. Well, they don't even know about it. They should, but they don't. They're small business people. They've got other priorities. They're trying to pay the bills every day. We understand that. But we have to find some way. We're going to lose this battle and not have any people, any good people in our industry to fix these cars if we don't try to fix all these things together.
Are we more fragmented than ever before?
Well, we've always said that we are a very fragmented industry. You know, we've gone through so much consolidation. You know, we saw it happen at the parts level, and you know, the shrinkage of the jobber population, the parts jobber. Even though a lot of those independent businesses are out there still, but now they belong to larger groups. So now you don't talk about this little independent business out there. You talk about his group, NAPA.
It's very smart that people did find a group to belong to give them some buying clout, some staying power to stay in the business. But yeah, you're right. That consolidation has made for some interesting bedfellows.
And the groups are actually, they're a solution to the problems.
Do they show up at NASTEF? Are they involved?
We've got several of the groups that have representatives that come to our meetings. And, you know, I think NASTEF's goal is to make sure that if we've identified a problem that we can, that spans across the OEM and the aftermarket, then we want everybody involved. So that if somebody's got an idea for a solution, then everyone should know about it. NASTEF doesn't need to take ownership of any solution. There's no sense of ownership. Like I said, NASTEF is here to solve the problem. So if somebody has a member benefit they're trying to create, great. Go ahead and do it. You know, NAPA's going to do for NAPA members what they want to do. That's great. Well, let's share those and make sure that what you're doing is going to can work for the industry. You know, somebody else can, you know, take it from there and develop their own version of your solution and compete. And we need to make it all better. It needs to all come together, really, at attracting great kids into a great industry and keeping them through a great career.
I'm moved by some of your thoughts. It almost seems to me like it's there, you know, the carrot and the stick. It's there, and I keep trying to reach for it, and it dangles a little bit away from me. But it's good to hear what you're saying, because, of course, I knew about NASTEF, but I didn't know enough about it, and I'm so glad we're having this chat too bad it's about you having retired from there, but you know, you can speak very comfortably now because it's behind you. You obviously, well, I'm sure you've left the organization in great shape for your successor, whoever that may be, but it's good to hear this information. And And I know the work that ASE does and ATMC. We've had Trisha on the show and David Milne on the show, and you know, and now you're here, and so many of the leaders within our industry. And there seems to be a slice of goodness from every organization. And all I could do is sit here, Skip, is to think, you know, I'm drawing a pinnacle with my hands here, pointing to the sky. Is there one tower, one lead, one someone who says, great idea, let me take that and run with it? But then everybody in the circle is all on the same page working toward that change in guidance councils, change in industry image, change in business management. Wow, I can't even imagine moving a freight train with no diesel fuel.
Yeah, but the tracks can lead anywhere, or can lead different places. So it doesn't need to be the same train.
I like what you just said. Very good.
You know, because there are many different organizations. And when you think about competition, you know, if the problem was we can't get the parts can't get to market, there would be a distribution chain. It doesn't mean that there's only going to be one. There's several program groups out there. There's several consolidated retail operations out there that they're all part of the solution.
I love it. I know there's a meeting in Vegas. I encourage everyone to look up as they go to Apex this year. I spoke to Donnie Cypher, who's on your board, the other day, and he mentioned it. And so I'm going, and I absolutely want to get to that meeting and see what's going on with you guys. And he promises a lot of great information. So you retired after all these wonderful years serving our industry. Any really good, just favorite memory that you'd love to share out of any of the jobs you've had?
I'm amazed at how big my LinkedIn group has gotten. I didn't know I knew that many people, but I like to learn, and this industry has given me a great opportunity to learn new things everywhere. I'm kind of a techie at heart anyway, so the evolution into technology, the opportunity to see technology at the service level, it has been very exciting for me in this career. But I wanted, several years ago, after I had been in parts sales for a long time, you know, I didn't know what was next. I knew about trade associations because I was always involved in my local trade associations, particularly as a supplier in a service organization for a service station or a garage organization. And when I went and interviewed for the old Automotive Service Industry Association, so anyway, my wife thinks I would make a good lobbyist. So she recruits one of her friends who happened to be a lobbyist in our industry.
And let me stop you for a minute. When I hooked up with Skip, I said, Skip, weren't you a lobbyist? And he says, are you kidding me? Because that's one of the memories that I had when you used to speak when you were with AAIA. And I always thought you were a lobbyist. So this is where the irony of the story comes from. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I thought I would make a terrible lobbyist. So, but anyway, somebody said it was free drink, so I was going to go. So anyway, so I go to this event in 1988 in Washington, D.C., where the aftermarket essentially was campaigning for some text in the 1990 Clean Air Act. And I met someone there. So I go to that. My wife's friend was going to introduce me around. And I walk into this ballroom, and I knew, you know, maybe a third of the people in the ballroom. I said, why do I know all these people? Well, I'd been in the industry long enough, and had come to find out who was at this meeting. They were all my suppliers. So I knew a lot of people there. And Jack Giebe, who was an executive with Moog Automotive back when Moog was its own company.
Sure.
He was the chairman of the board for the Automotive Service Industry Association. And he, after we had lunch. He called John Nerlinger, who was the president of and CEO of the Automotive Service Industry Association, and said, "Hey, John, I found your replacement for Paul Heward, the manager of your wholesaler division." He said, "Great, give me his number." He calls me up. He says, "I want you to come for an interview." Okay. Where? Chicago. When? Well, tomorrow. Okay. I'll send you a ticket. So, well, I can't come tomorrow. How about the next day? Okay. Get here early. So I get up there in Chicago and I interview for a whole day, and he says, "Okay, Paul likes you. And I like you. So let's, the board needs to meet you now. And the wholesaler group needs to meet you." They meet in a couple of days. Can you get back here? Or, yeah. So I said, "Well, I need to go back to D.C., talk to my boss, but yeah, I'm interested, and I'll come back." He said, "Well, it's in Denver, or it's in Colorado. It's in Colorado Springs, actually." I said, "Oh, really? Okay." So I go home, and I tell my wife, and I said, "I got another interview in a couple of days. It's in Colorado Springs." She says, "What?"
What happened since I talked to you last?
Yeah, right. I thought you were going to be a lobbyist and live in D.C. No, I don't. You know, what's going on here? So anyway, that's it. All happened very quickly, and I got the job, and it was wonderful. And I was one of the things that I was working towards, like I said, I like to learn. And when I got to know the association business very well, I thought I wanted to be the CEO of one of the associations, and I was. The state associations were all very near and dear to my heart, and I knew a lot of the state association execs. And when one of those positions came open, I was very glad to have the opportunity.
And which one was that?
The Chesapeake Automotive Business Association.
I remember that. You remember Alan Vanderzee?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, back in the executive group of association execs back in the day.
Yeah, they're now called the Automotive. I'm looking up on my wall because I was, that. When you talk about things you're most proud of, I got to be their president one year. You know, they have presidents from the different state associations that serve 1 year terms, so.
Congrats to an incredible career in the industry to lead NASDAQ for the last five. I'm sure we could go on and you could tell all kinds of stories that would probably make many of us in the industry learn about how our industry worked and who some of the leaders were. And, you know, I always think about doing some legacy interviews and getting the stories told of the evolution of the automotive aftermarket. And, you know, there's a lot of key players out there that are really responsible for who we are today and how we've evolved. And no doubt you're one of them.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Oh, by the way, talking about show, tell me about your radio career.
You know, when I was trying to decide what I wanted to do with my life, you know, I was working on cars and I was not sure if I was a writer or not. I had done some technical writing. I was helping a friend of mine with a race car at Winchester Speedway in outside of Washington, D.C., in Northern Virginia. And there was a newspaper guy that came there, Tri-State Speed Press, and old Bob and Dick Jones were up there all the time taking photos, and there would be photos in their paper, but there would be no write-ups about anything that the drivers were doing or the races at that speedway. And he said, "Well, we don't have a writer up here." He said, "If you'll write something, I'll put it in." So I said, "Well, I don't know. I've never written anything for publication before." So I remember I took like the entire month of July at least to write like a 300-word article about a race that we had at Winchester.
You were trying to be perfect.
I guess. Or I don't know. So I sent it in to him on a Sunday, and it appeared in the paper on Monday. I said, "Now wait, what's wrong with this picture? I just spent a month writing this little paragraph, and it you put it in your paper just immediately. So he calls me up and he says, if you'd like to do this, we're a weekly paper. I said, okay, well, I'll give it a try. So I started writing for the paper, and it was a pretty huge commitment. So anyway, I was a guest a couple of years later. I met a guy who was doing a radio show in Washington, D.C. on auto racing. It was like a Sunday night, you know. They had to have somebody to fill the airtime, and they had this guy come in and do this Sunday night show on auto racing. And he was in Daytona and got sick and couldn't get back. And I'd been a guest on his show several times. So he called me up and he said, hey, would you go do my show? You've been on my show several times. So, you know, there's an engineer there to take care of you. So all you got to do is just go talk. All you got to do is talk. So I said, okay, I guess. So I go and I do that show. A couple of years later, I started my own syndication in the state of Virginia, the Virginia Race Line. And I went out and recruited. It was just a 5-minute morning show, recap show of things that happened in the state of Virginia in racing over the weekend. I got three or four radio stations around the state to sell advertising on it and pay me a little bit of money. And so I got this show on, and I joined a group called the National Motorsports Press Association. And I submitted my radio show 1 year as for spot news. They called it spot news. It was the spot news category. As I recall, it was the University of South Carolina Journalism School that year that was doing the review of all the different categories and stuff. So anyway, I go to their NMPA meeting in, when was it? About 1976, maybe, something like that. And it turns out I won the category, and second place was Ned Jarrett, a good friend of mine, and the Associated Press was third. So I thought, well, maybe this is the career I should take. And then I interviewed for a couple of PR jobs in the motor racing industry, and they didn't pan out. And I said, you know, I like working at Auto Parts Warehouse, and I like the industry, so I think I'll just focus my time there. And I kind of quit doing all the motorsports press and things. So.
Regret anything?
Oh no, I've had a great career, and I'm glad I've touched each part of it. In fact, you know, one of the things that we don't make a big enough deal out of in our industry is there's other people out there like me who have had diverse, exciting careers in our industry. And we don't showcase those enough so that kids coming along can see, you know, I can start out like this old guy did, pumping gas at a Sunoco station, putting oil in the wrong hole of a Renault. But look what he did, and look at all the parallel roads that lead to great careers in this industry. And all the segments. So we need to tell those stories more. And that's really part of that building a road to great technicians is it building those stories, exposing those stories to the parents and the kids so that they don't think that if you're buying into a career as an auto technician, well, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe there's some other things you're going to do.
Well, that's what I do. We tell stories here on the podcast, and this whole legacy thing continues to bubble up with me. And, you know, you excite me to know that there are stories like Skip Potter's that need to be told by many other people in the industry. Would you help me find the rest of these people?
Oh, sure. I mean, you just mentioned a couple already. I mean, you mentioned Donnie Cipher. Donnie Cipher, a son of a shop owner, but Donnie's gotten involved in so many other things. He's an educator. Dave Milne.
I've had Dave on just 3 or 4 weeks ago. A fabulous episode. I've had Donnie on 4 times. So yeah, we're getting those stories told. And I may have done some interviews that you may be super surprised about, but then, you know, getting in a little deeper into some of our senior members of our industry that can, you know, help us tell the stories of the evolution of our industry and how hard they worked back in the day doing all the things you're talking about today. And, you know, now it's left with today's generation, if you will, today's volunteers to do a lot of great things. Skip Potter, retired executive director of NASDAQ. He didn't think that would ever happen. I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for being on.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Skip Potter, for the backstory on the value of NASDAQ to the entire automotive service industry. And thank you for all your years of service to make our beloved aftermarket what it is today. I wish you well in your retirement and the many great memories of the people you helped to influence throughout your career. Find this episode's talking points with Skip Potter and an extended bio at remarkableresults.biz/E262. Hey, don't forget to tune into the Town Hall Academy live webcast each Friday at 12 noon Eastern. To get your links and participate in this unique industry first, go to remarkableresults.biz/live. Hey, thank you for listening. In a recent survey, I've learned that 37% of my listeners listen at home and 13% of you listen at lunch. Whenever or wherever you listen, my sincere thanks go out to you for making the podcast an important industry resource. Never forget, you're an important reason I bring you these interviews so you can profit from the answers found in each episode. Until next time.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.